So I'd like to open up God's Word and share some thoughts with you. And we've got some exciting things for today. Been looking forward to this message for several weeks just how God's been working this out. We're in the book of Exodus. So the second book of the Bible, Genesis, and then the second book is Exodus. So if you're not familiar with the Bible, you can dive into this. We're going to be reading from Exodus chapter 5 and 6. And we left off last week with Moses and Aaron following God and God's special assignment. You remember the special and general assignments? The general assignments are simply, this is what God always wants for everyone. To be kind, to be loving and such. We went through a list of those last week. That's the general assignments. We expect everyone would be doing the general assignments. And then God interrupts into our lives at different points and gives us special assignments. And so we talked about that a little bit last week, and we ended out with understanding that there's some fine print we need to understand about these special assignments. And so Moses and Aaron, they have been given this special assignment to go and to lead Israel out of Egypt. And so they're in this position of slavery, and so they go, and as they do, they announce to the people around there, the leadership, in a sense, the elders and such of Israel, and they say, hey, listen, God has heard your prayers. We're coming. And God said he's going to deliver you out of the hands of the Egyptians. And they're filled with hope. And that's where we ended last week. They're filled with hope because Moses and Aaron are simply an answer to God's prayer. It was awesome. And here's what we're going to find this week, that things don't always go the way that we imagine. It reminds me of a story I heard recently. A story about a bird who delayed to go down south for the winter. You know how birds do this. They, big or small, whatever, they fly down south for the winter, and we see them going. And this bird, you know, I don't know if it was just a procrastinator or what it was, but it didn't feel like going down quite yet. So it kind of hung back and maybe hung out or whatever and was doing its own thing. And while it was hanging out, the weather came in and got colder and colder. And before long, it realized, oh, this is a problem. I need to start heading south for the winter. I mean, bird brains do think in all these concepts, of course. And so it begins to fly down, but then a cold snap comes in, and it gets really cold. And while it's flying in the air, it gets into freezing, and the bird, this little bird, is trying to fly, and its wings freeze while it's flying. Well, a bird's wings that freeze, you know, like this, it just did a nosedive, went down, and just kind of landed in the middle of a pasture somewhere, and it just, there it is, just. And the cold is coming in, and the bird can't fly, can't hardly move, and it's just waiting around to die, thinking that this is it, this is the end, I'm going to freeze to death right now. A little bit frustrated, a little bit annoyed, you know, blaming itself and blaming others and all these things that typically happen. And just as it's sitting there in this pity party, this cow comes over and drops some manure right on the bird. What an amazing time. The bird is just frustrated because the bird is just going through a rough day already, and now it's sitting in a pile of manure. But what the bird didn't realize was manure is warm. So the bird, while it's sitting there in a pile of manure, is getting warmed up and begins to thaw. And while it's thawing out, it begins to move and gets the wings going and is excited and begins to get its way out of the manure and begins to flap and get all the stuff off of the bird. Gets so excited, like, hey, I can get back on my journey, that it starts to chirp. And it's kind of singing a song right in the pile of manure while it's trying to get out, and starts to walk away from the pile of manure. But as it does, it's chirping loudly. There's a cat nearby that hears the chirping of the bird. Cat jumps on the bird, pounces on it, kills it, and eats it. So there's five life lessons we should learn from this story. Life lesson number one, procrastination is not a good thing. Procrastination is not a good thing. Number two, stinky circumstances aren't always a bad thing. Number three, getting out of stinky circumstances isn't always a good thing. Number four, while you're in a stinky situation, keep your chirper quiet. And number five, my favorite, cats are evil. So as Moses and Aaron are following God's special assignment, they discover a few life lessons of their own. And we're in Exodus chapter 5 and 6. I thought that'd be a good way of introducing this message. If you like cats, you're walking out right now, but that's okay. Exodus chapter 5, verse 1. So Moses and Aaron, they've talked to the people of Israel. The people of Israel are all excited. And so the expectation is, hey, listen, things are going great. The people are excited. So let's go in. Let's tell Pharaoh, hey, Pharaoh, God spoke to us. And here's the deal. It's time to let the people go. We want to just go on a three-day worship kind of service journey thing. And so they go in chapter 5, verse 1. It says, afterward, Moses and Aaron went, and they said to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel. It's interesting that Pharaoh is accessible to these foreigners, essentially. But he says, thus says the Lord, God of Israel, let my people go. Here's what God's saying, and Pharaoh, we're just communicating this message to you. They're going full confidence because everyone's excited. This is going to be a great day. That they may hold a feast with me in the wilderness. So essentially, we're asking for just a few days off to go worship together. So here's the interesting thing. Pharaoh responds in a way that they did not expect. Even though God warned them, they were not expecting this next part. So verse 2, but Pharaoh said, who is the Lord? Who is the Lord? Who is this one that you're talking about? That I should obey his voice and let Israel go. I do not know the Lord, and moreover, I will not let Israel go. Here's the first life lesson, the things in fine print, if you will. When God gives special assignments, oftentimes there's this fine print of things that we're not always aware of. And I want to make you aware of those things, because as you follow God, there's some things that are going to happen along the way that you should be prepared for as you get there. It's kind of like when my kids turned 16 or 17 and they got their driver's license. One of the things that I did was I showed them how to change the tire on their car just in case they had a flat tire. And so that was one of the things. It's preparation for this thing that's coming up. And if you know, if they go to Pennsylvania, they've got to learn how to pump their own gas, which I didn't prepare them for that so well, but they'll call me when they need that. But anyway, there's different situations you need to be prepared for. And so we find these situations in this book. We see that Moses and Aaron are going to go through some crazy times. And here's the first thing that we see. People don't always listen to God. People don't always listen to God. That's like a no-brainer, isn't it? But it's not a no-brainer because we expect that people would listen to God, especially if you're one that's listening to God. You would think, why would people be unkind? Why would people be mean? Why would people be hurtful? Why do people do things that they do? And it's a surprise to us in many different situations. Here we see Moses and Aaron, they go to Pharaoh and they say, hey, Pharaoh, here's what God says. And Pharaoh simply responds, no. I don't know this God that you're talking about, which is interesting because the people of God are numerous and he knows nothing about this God that they're talking about. So then you go down a little bit further. And you see in verse 3, then they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with a sword. Listen, God gave us instructions. We need to follow through with this, Pharaoh. Do you think their heart was beating a little heavy at this point time? I would be nervous. I'd be scared out of my mind. I'm before Pharaoh, and I know God gave instruction, but here we go. But the kings of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people away from their work? Get back to your burdens. And Pharaoh said, behold, the people of the land are now many. And you make them rest from their burdens. The same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people of their foremen, you shall no longer give the people straw to make bricks as in the past. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. But the number of bricks that they made in the past you shall impose in them. You shall by no means reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry, let us go and offer sacrifice to our God. Let heavier work be laid on the men that they may labor at it and pay no regard to lying words. Very simply, he's saying, listen, you think they have time to take off? I'm not shutting the factory down so you can go on your crazy worship service. Oh, no. Matter of fact, since you think they have this much time, I'm going to increase the burden on them. And things go from, you know, okay and manageable to much worse. And here's the second thing we see. Here's a second life lesson. Things often get worse before they get better. Things often get worse before they get better. When you're following God and when you're on an assignment from God to do the right thing and you step out to do the right thing, you often find that the next thing that happens is things get worse before they get better. And that's what happens. They had to go get their own straw. Now, time out just for a second. Why would this happen is a big question mark. And my speculation into this would be that God already told Moses that what's going to happen is he's going to have the people driven out of Egypt, and the people in Egypt are going to give them all kinds of gold and all kinds of valuable things as they leave, kind of like a departing present. What I think is happening is God is expanding the amount of people that they're talking to a scope that's way beyond now. So now they're talking to all kinds of people. They've got to gather the straw. They've got to go talk to this one and get connected to this one. And they're expanding the people that they're connected to. And so that they would be blessed even more. That's my speculation into the text. But as they do, they went from just making bricks to now they had to get the materials to be able to make the bricks. And they had to do it in the same amount of time. I know some employers have done that to certain people where they said, you know what, we're going to lay this person off, and you're now going to take their responsibilities. It's like, whoa, hold on a second. And some of you have been through that. And this is certainly like that, but maybe even worse, because the punishment for not following through was horrible. But here's my point. Things often get worse before they get better. Things often get worse before they get better. When you set out to do God's assignment, you often find that the next step is things get worse. So teens, you're in school, and you say, this year I'm going to do it. I'm going to get better, what? Grades. I'm going to turn my homework in on time. I'm going to get a B or an A or whatever. I'm going to do a better job with this. But then when you make that decision, here's what happens shortly thereafter. You actually have to do the work, which causes a lot of pain, where you're like, oh, man, I got to do all this. I signed up for this, and now it's like, here's the reality. Things get worse before they get better. It's not like, hey, I'm going to get A's this year, and they magically happen. I know we'd like to think that. But you have to actually work at that. Do you realize that to break an addiction is the same? To break an addiction from prescription medicine, prescription painkillers. I've walked through this journey with different people, and as they break this addiction out of the prescription or out of the smoking this or shooting up this or whatever, oftentimes, most of the time, the people that break that addiction, and this is not a well-known fact with people that aren't into addictions, but the first thing that happens is after they make that decision, they stop doing the drugs or doing this thing that they've been doing, after that, the next part is their body goes into this kind of convulsive or into this painful state where it feels like the flu times 10. Not for a day, not for a couple of days, but generally it's for a week or two or three. And if you've walked through this with certain people, you know how painful it is. And just to get from point A over to the other side, that first 1 month is so challenging to get through. Or maybe you said, I'll quit smoking or whatever it might be. This addiction, you're like, I gotta quit. And you do. And you know that first few weeks, you have a first couple days that's not so bad. But then your body says, whoa, enough of this. Things often get worse before they get better. Or maybe something that we're all accustomed to, where you say, hey, listen, I need to get on a budget and do better with my finances. I need to save. I need to be prepared. I need to, and you get on that track, and here's what happens. You are saying to yourself, I'm no longer going to spend at the level that I was spending at before. And do you realize what that does to you? That puts you into this position where you have to rearrange your life to do things totally different. Instead of going out twice a week to dinner or whatever, now you're not going out. And you're like, I got to fix food. I don't like to fix food. And you have all this. Things often get worse before they get better. That's normal. It's normal. And most of the time, that's where we stop. As it gets worse, we take from the application from that. Many times we take from that, well, I guess it wasn't meant to be. Time out. Things often get worse before they get better. If it's getting worse after you've made a decision to follow Christ in whatever area he's leading you in, if it gets worse, don't be surprised. take that next step and say, okay, God, help me to get through this. Well, that's what's going on with the Israelites. Things have gone from manageable to now things are horrible. And you read through the next few verses, the taskmasters and the foreman, now they're dispensing the work and they've got to do all of this stuff and they've got to collect the straw. And the people are just like, whoa, time out. We can't do that. And they said, we don't care what you think or what you say. You're going to do it. That's a rough day. And here's what happens. It's interesting. The foreman, now they have an audience with Pharaoh. They're able to go to the Pharaoh and say, hey, listen, there's a problem here. We can't do this. And Pharaoh says, oh, yes, you can. And if you can't, there's going to be problems. And so then they go back, and it's interesting how all of this works out, because in the next couple verses, we see how everyone responds to pain. How do you respond to pain? Most of us run from it, right? We don't enjoy pain, unless if you're a Marine, like Jim told me a couple weeks ago. If you're a Marine, you like pain. Yeah, okay. So Pharaoh is saying, get busy, make the bricks. You're idle. And he's saying all these things, get to work. And he says, I don't care about the straw. You're going to find it. You're going to figure out a way. And so then you go down and you see the response. You see, here's the reality. Third life lesson that I want to kind of share with you is that people quit before God quits. People quit before God quits. The first person to quit a long time ago. I don't think he even believed in God. He does say that, so I think that's an easy thing to say, is Pharaoh. Pharaoh didn't believe in God. He wasn't going to believe in God. He didn't want to believe in God. There's nothing that said, I want to discover more about God. I just don't care. Just leave me alone with this whole God thing that you got going on. He quit on God before God was even really introduced to him. Here's the second ones that quit. Go down a little bit further. Verse 19, the foreman of the people of Israel, they saw that they were in trouble when they said, you shall by no means reduce the number of bricks, your daily task each day. Verse 20, then they met Moses and Aaron who were waiting for them as they came out from Pharaoh. So they come out and the people are coming over. How's this conversation go? Moses and Aaron, hey, how things are going? And they said to them, the Lord look on you and judge because you've made us stink in the sight of Pharaoh. You dropped manure on us. You made us stink in front of Pharaoh. You have simply put a sword into his hand to kill us. Look, what you said, what you did, listen, this should be on your head. And what's going on with us now is our families are now falling apart. The little time I had with my family, I have zero now. The pain that I'm in, I was hardly keeping up. And this guy, he's too old to do this. He's going to fall. He's going to die. Do you understand the pain that you're putting us into by doing this? Essentially, they quit. They said, we're done. This whole thing that you've contrived, great worship service yesterday, that was awesome. But today, forget about it. Just leave, get out of town. Let us get back to where we are. Pharaoh can't stand us. We need to get our reputation back with Pharaoh so he treats us, you know, pretty decent again. I love how we often handle this as Christians. When things get bad and we have a pile of manure that's dropped on us, a lot of times here's what we do. We go to the person and we kind of listen for as long as our attention span goes, right? And we have prepared this great Christian verse, this verse that Paul said, well, sister, well, brother, I understand you're in a stinky circumstance. I get it, man. I've been in stinky circumstances, and let me just encourage you. Paul says in Romans 8:28, all things work together for what? For good. So count it all joy, brother, sister. We talk in these great Christianese terms, and have you ever been on the other side of that? You're like, thanks. That was a wonderful speech you had there. I'll pray for you. Okay, thanks. And oftentimes while we're going through that and we're sitting there in a stinky circumstance, we're sitting there, we're wanting to quit, and we're looking really for someone to come alongside and say, yeah, I get it. I've been there. Let me journey, or maybe I've never gotten it, and I don't know. Let me just journey through this with you. Let's walk together in this one, or let me just listen to you. Moses is interesting because in the next verse you see him talking to God. What does Moses say back to God? Moses turned to God, to the Lord, and said, "Oh Lord, why have you done this evil to this people? Why did you do this? Why did you allow things to get worse? Why did you, they're already in a bad situation. I thought you came to bring me here so I would rescue them." And he says the next verse, he says, "Why did you ever send me? Why did you do this? Why did you give me this special assignment? I didn't ask for it, remember? Why do I have to be the one? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all." And it's as if he says, "I quit. God, you're not doing what you said you would do, so therefore, God, I'm done, I'm out, I quit." I love the fact that people quit, yes, but God doesn't. Because in the next chapter, in chapter 6, verse 1, "But the Lord said to Moses, 'Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh.'" Do you remember? This was what I will do. I will do this. I'm going to call you, Moses, and I'm going to use you to deliver the people. And I'm going to make it so that Pharaoh kicks the people out. I will do this. I will do that. And he's simply saying, "I've got this. Here's my commitment. Here's my promise. I'm not quitting until this is done." He says, "With a strong hand, he will send them out, and with a strong hand, he will drive them out of this land." So God spoke to Moses, "I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac." I wonder if Moses was a little bit nervous. It's one thing to have a conversation with Pharaoh. It's a whole other thing to have a conversation with God. And he reaffirms his commitments here. Then to verse 9. Moses, have you had this moment where you feel confidence again, where you're struggling? It's like, "Oh yeah, that's right. Okay, I got to get back on the bandwagon here." And he turns back to the people and he says this in verse 9. Moses spoke thus to the people of Israel. And he said, "Hey, listen, God's got this. He's going to lead it. He's going to get you out. Don't you worry about it." But they did not listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. They were done. They couldn't listen, they couldn't hear, they didn't want any part of it because they were under such oppression for so long. They were just simply saying, "There's no way out." So here's what I love. Here's what God does next. It's fascinating. In verse 10, he does not stop things right there and pause and say, "Hey people, what's your problem?" Here's what he does next. Verse 10. "So the Lord said to Moses, 'Go in, tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the people of Israel get out of this land.' But Moses said to the Lord," so essentially God's response to all of that is, "Moses, do you remember that special assignment I gave to you? Remember that burning bush? Remember all of this? Remember I've been leading you? Remember this? Get back to work. I know they have a broken spirit. I know they said no. I know they quit. I get it. It is not on you to start a revolution with them. It's on me to send or to have Pharaoh drive them out. So don't worry about them. I'll take care of them later." So he says, Moses said to the Lord, "Behold, the people of Israel, they have not listened to me. How then shall Pharaoh listen to me? For I am of uncircumcised lips." Listen, my own people, they don't want to have anything to do with me. So you think Pharaoh's going to listen? You crazy? I wouldn't suggest calling God crazy, by the way. "But the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron and gave them a charge about the people of Israel and about Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the people out of the land of Egypt." And from there, we understand that Moses goes. And then you get into chapter 7. He goes, and it declares there, and Moses was 80, and Aaron was 83 years old. And that's when this all started here. Isn't it fascinating? People quit before God quits. But God doesn't quit, even when people do. God doesn't say, all right, fine, you quit, I quit too. He doesn't even the score there. God says, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it, and I don't need you to do it for me. He is all-sufficient by himself. And I love this. I love how God gives out special assignments to Moses, and very simply, God says, I got this huge plan for you. You don't even understand at this point in time. You're not going to get right now, but I have this huge plan that I'm going to fulfill through you. Do you realize, church, that God has special assignments for each and every one of us? He has the general assignments that says, hey, listen, I want you to follow me. I want you to follow me no matter what's going on. I want you to follow me. Be kind, be loving, be forgiving. All of these things, God says, here's my general assignments. And then there's the special assignment that God calls us to go do this or go to them or whatever it is. And he gives us special assignments. And it's not for us to make sure that we have the power and strength to do it on ourselves. It's that God gives us the strength inside of us to be able to do it. He gives us a brand new perspective, gives us the connections we need, and guides us through the process as we go. And so my encouragement, very simply, don't quit on God. Don't quit on God. Keep asking him for strength. Keep asking him for direction. I like that Moses paused, but he got back engaged and said, okay, I get it. So God, I'll keep following you. That's where we're going to be. Okay, God, I'm going to just jump right in. And he's starting to understand the reality that things often get worse before they get better. So what's God doing in you? I've seen a lot of people do this. I've seen a lot of people walk through different parts of their life where they go on special assignments for God. And I see God do some amazing things in people. And today I want to do something that I've never done before. I want to interview a couple that's on special assignment right now. So this is a little different, but I think it's beneficial for all. I want to introduce you to my friends, Jim and Nikki Morenik. Jim and Nikki, why don't you make your way up, and I want to introduce them to you a little bit, and I'm going to do something weird. I'm going to interview them, and they know about this. This is not spontaneous. I met with them several weeks ago. Melly and I went over to their house and talked with them and asked them a bunch of questions. And essentially, we're going to re-ask some of those questions and give them the opportunity to respond so we can all glean from what special assignment God has for them. So here's the background. If you don't know Jim and Nikki, Jim and Nikki live in Philadelphia, and they've been coming to this church for, it's been 11 years. And so it takes about 40 minutes to get here, so it's kind of challenging to come on a regular basis, I would think. But we're glad when they're able to get over the bridge and get here. And so God's done some amazing things. I got the privilege of marrying them, it was 10 and a half years ago. I asked Jim, that's how I remember this, not because, and if I'm wrong, then it's Jim's fault. Oh, good, he's right. So if you don't know, Jim and Nikki, after they got married, their desire was to have children. And they were not able to have children. And so we had met several times, and what a hard thing to work through. And so as they walked through that aspect of their life, they just began to pray, okay, God, I don't know what you have for us, but we really wanted to have children, and you're not allowing for us to have children, so what's next? And through a lot of prayer and counsel and different things that they worked through, they decided to open up their home to extend their family through adoption and fostering. And so they've been doing this for the past couple of years and been part of that process and excited for how God's been using them. And so That's the background to this special assignment, because they just sense that this is what God wanted for them. And it's been an exciting journey to watch. And so here's what I'm going to do. Jim, why don't you start by introducing, or maybe not introducing, but sharing with everybody your family.
We started off with a brand new baby 2 days out of the hospital. His name was He stayed with us for 4 months. Then we moved on to a little boy that most of you know, stayed with us for a little bit more than a year. And now we got, which has been with us for a year. Then we got a sibling group that are with us still. And just recently we got, which is in the back. And he was a brand new baby when we got him.
Okay.
I just want to add a little to that. Our family, Jim and I actually have, I know we're not dwelling on this, but 5 children who've preceded us to heaven. I've miscarried 3 of them, and 2 of them were embryos from IVF that just didn't take. So that's 5 kids. I believe life begins at conception. And was born 12/12/16. For one of mine, I was due 12/12/12. So I was really believing. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right.
I was really believing that was a gift. I mean, I believed it with my whole heart because why give us a baby that was born on my due date 4 years later? Hmm. I mean, he ended up going back with his family, with his grandmother when he was 4 months old.
On my birthday.
Yeah.
And then we got on, and let me tell you, it was a challenge, but I am so glad that was in our lives. And he still is.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add.
Yeah. And a couple weeks ago when Mel and I went over to visit, I was there hanging out, and often we'll go over there on weekends and such as well.
We usually get them about once a month for the weekend.
Yeah. So there's the backstory. Thank you. And so, okay, so questions. Why did you get into fostering, of all things? What drove you there?
Well, that was me mostly.
Yes.
I'd always wanted kids my whole life. I even thought about going into child care when I was in high school. Well, I ended up in aviation, but I wanted 4 kids of my own, identical twin girls, identical twin boys, and I wanted to adopt 8 from different countries. Adoption is expensive, and when I was 15, I ended up in a foster home myself. And to this day, 28 years later, I'm still best friends with one of my foster sisters. Mm. So it's kind of like how your story ends up playing into your future without you even knowing what's going on. So we did look into adoption, and we would still love to adopt, but it's really expensive. And I decided I'd rather help kids who are here who need a family rather than trying to wait for one from somewhere else. And it's hard giving back kids sometimes when they've been in your home and you've loved them, you've got attached to them.
Yeah. Can you describe the process of fostering? Because most of us don't have no idea what it is to be a foster parent and how that process works. So can you describe that for us?
You go through training. You go through classes. It's like 8-week classes, one day a week. You go through training, and a lot of it is after the training, you're still training. Because after the training, like, classes pop up usually every 3 months that you can go, and some of the information is very, very helpful. Nikki is the one that usually says, look, you're taking off of work to do this training, because I'm the one that says, we don't need it, and it's very helpful. So after the training, and then you get what I could say is put on the list. And when a foster kid happens to pop up, they call you. all the time you do not get the kids that you say yes to. Because Nikki has said yes to
every kid that we've ever been called for.
And they just don't, they don't show up because either another agency got the foster kid and they placed them in a home before, you know, they were able to get back to us, or something else has happened with them. You know, they went somewhere else. So and then being with the kids, being with the kids that I have now, the 10-year-old has taught me a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of it is hands-on, just raising them up.
So tell me, what's your initial feelings? So that you get the phone call, and you get off the phone. Who do they call? Which phone?
Nikki.
Nikki's phone. Okay, so Nikki gets the phone call. She's now talking to Jim. What's your initial feelings when you get that first, or that phone call, any one of the children that you're fostering?
I know for me, the first thing I say to her, and you can ask her, can we do this? Mm-hmm. Are we ready to do this? And Nikki says every time, yes, we are.
I said, we'll work it out, you know, cross that bridge when we come to it. Like, you never know. You can prepare and plan for whatever you want, and life doesn't always turn out the way you want. So, and the same with the kids. And I really feel that the kids God have placed with us are the ones he wanted, and that's why some of the ones we've got calls for didn't show up. I still have to believe that God is guiding it and directing, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do question, like, can we handle this? Like, when we had the one, and we're all of a sudden getting two more, he's like, we can't do this. I said, yes, we can, you know. And the same thing when we got married, I didn't want the kids to be separated. And now, of course, he's seeing that it's challenging, but we can handle it with God's help, of course.
Yeah. So the one thing's in talking with you guys and to Jim's mom, and I didn't have a chance to talk to your mom, of course, but their perspective on this is not that it's us and the foster children, but it's that this is the Moranic family. And even Jim's mom said, these are my grandkids. It's awesome. What a perspective, right? And so what do you do to welcome the kids into the Moranic family?
Before you go and do that,
go ahead.
Nikki's mom has said that they're her grandchildren too.
Okay.
All my family.
That's awesome.
Even though they're in Michigan.
Yeah.
We FaceTime a lot.
Yeah.
Well, when they get to our house, they're usually hungry. They want to eat something. So, of course, we give them whatever that we have in the house that they want to eat to just make them feel comfortable. So far, we've had little ones, but since we've had the 10-year-old, we needed to get her a bed because we didn't have a big enough bed for her. One of the things we did was we went out to the store and found out what beds we could choose from. We let her pick it. We let her anyway, so far, decorate her room, put things on the wall, and to make her feel that that's her room.
That's cool.
You know, that's her space. The little ones, they just want to play with toys. So if we got the toys there, they're willing just to sit there and play with toys.
Yeah. What's the best part of this?
The kids.
Seeing this.
Yeah, just
seeing their smiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Knowing, hoping that you're making a difference in their lives, even if they don't know it and you don't know it, you don't see it. Hoping that that's what it's all about, is the kids.
And I gotta say, I like it when when I get home from work, Daddy, get on the floor. All the two boys want to do right now is wrestle around on the floor. So even if I'm hungry or got to get a shower from sweating in the shop,
stinky,
I get on the floor and I play with the two boys for at least a half an hour. I put my things aside and play with them boys. Because that's what they want.
Yeah, best part of your day. It's cool. What's the hardest part?
Giving them back.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard, but really the hardest part is everybody else that you have to deal with, your caseworker, their caseworkers.
Yeah, Nikki does.
Parents. It's difficult, and sometimes you don't always feel that the agency is doing what's best for the children. They're in your home, you know the children better, but as a foster parent, you have very little say in what happens. So that's where you just have to pray and trust God that he knows what he's doing. And sometimes the hard part is when you give a kid back and you still get to see them, as we do with women, because you see all the work that you've done just kind of go down the drain. Because this last weekend, or the last time we had a couple weeks ago, there were some good moments, but he was awful, and I'll be honest, he was awful, but I know that at least he'll have that foundation, I hope, to look back on to know that life can be different. But I'm still glad that we get to see him, even if it is challenging.
So I'm going to ask him one more question, but then I want to open it up and give you an opportunity to ask them questions, okay? So I'll give you a minute to think. And we'll do this for a couple minutes, and then you can ask afterwards. But what advice would you give to someone who's considering fostering?
To do it.
Just be prepared for a lot of heartache. There's a lot of red tape you have to go through. You have, like I mentioned, the hardest part dealing with the different agencies in Philadelphia. We have to deal with community umbrella agencies, which are like little mini DHSs. So you have DHS, then you have, you know, their caseworkers through the community umbrella agency, and
paperwork.
Yeah, paperwork. You got to keep track of everything. Every time they go to the doctor, every time you got to skin their knee, but just be prepared for the unexpected, like taking them to visits. I get confirmation for a visit, and then last week they're like, oh, the visit's not going to happen. You're telling me 5 hours before the visit that there's not going to be a visit, and then you just, there's very little communication. So just be prepared to be flexible, but it's very rewarding. You know, seeing those little kids, I mean, just when I pick them up from daycare, like they, mommy, you know, or Miss Mickey, as Pat likes to call me, you know, but it's just, they're happy to see you. You know, it's rewarding too. The challenges are well worth it. Like the rewards are so much better than all the challenges that you have to go through for this process.
And you don't have the answers sometimes for, like, when a 10-year-old says, well, why didn't my mom want to see me? We don't know why it was canceled. We just was told it was canceled. So you gotta not lie to them, but you gotta be prepared to try to help answer a 10-year-old's question of why am I not going to see my mom today? And we don't know the answers. They don't tell us. They just tell us it's canceled. So you gotta put up with trying to talk to a 10-year-old of, and you try to get their mind off of it by trying to say, well, let's go to the playground, let's do this, let's do that, and just try to get their mind off of why they need to see their mother, father, or whoever.
Yeah. It's huge. And if you don't know, Jim and Nikki both have full-time jobs. Jim just works down here in Magnolia, and Nikki works in Philadelphia at the airport, Northeast. And so they're both working full time. So all of the adjustments that they make as they go are, to me, like, it blows my mind. Like,
And I work 6 days a week.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a lot. What questions do you have? Ruby?
Is there an illegal way you can fight this system that kind of take money and baby back?
Is there a what? A legal way to...
Only if you've had them more than 6 months, which in our case we have, but I haven't heard officially what date, but I was at court and I know it was court ordered that they're moving to a kinship home who's actually a friend of the mom, and I kind of disagree with that because it's not family, but again, I don't have any say because it is kinship. But after 6 months, yes, you can fight if they're going to be placed like in another foster home for whatever reason. Like in our case, it's because the judge doesn't know that we would take their baby sister, who's only a month older than me, because the caseworker, their caseworker, doesn't think our home is big enough, even though we're licensed for five. So yes, you can after 6 months, but it's still a slim chance of keeping them.
Because the
I hope that answered your question.
The real thing is for reunification with the parents or kinship. So until they give the mother and the father time to, you know, get their act together to get their children back. And if they don't get their act together, that's when they stay with us. And if it moves to adoption, that's when we would get first choice to adopt them. Good. But to fight, probably slim to none.
Yeah. Zaida.
Yes. Yes.
Of course.
That's a good question. Any other questions? Sonny.
Is that as expensive to adopt them after you foster them as just adopting?
No, it's not. There's actually very little cost involved in it. Just the home study, which is part of the reason, you know, because it's tens of thousands of dollars, you know, which... I get it, you have to pay for certain things, but to me, adopting a child shouldn't be a money-making business.
Yeah, agreed. Crystal.
You don't have to answer, but were you reunified when you were in foster
care? I was. I was only in my foster home for 6 months. And I wasn't taken out, like, taken. I wasn't getting along with my mom, and the counselor at school thought that I would be better off away from my mom for a little while. Looking back, I know it was all part of God's plan, you know, to push us in the fostering direction.
Cool. Over here.
Just wondering of the children that you had, how many actually get to go back with their parents? Do the parents become capable of becoming good parents for their children?
Well, that's a hard question to answer because we really don't know because we've only had six now. The first one, he went with his grandmother, so that was kinship. So even if we'd had him a year, it's his grandmother. We have no say whatsoever. Went back with his dad. We've established the relationship with him so that we still get to see him. I'm trying to work on a relationship with the other two parents, but it's not that they don't want to. I just don't think they're capable. And... we still don't know how that case is going. We've heard very little about trying whether even in care. So you don't always know.
That's good. That's good.
And we did establish a very good relationship with his dad where you asked Nikki the first time I met, well, we seen him, I said, he's going to be a problem. And I really don't think we should take him. because he's going to be a problem. And 6 months down the road, we're talking to him like we're talking to Pastor Bill. And today, he's got both of our phone numbers, and he calls us on a regular basis. You know, do you want for this weekend? Do you want, can you babysit for this time? Mm. So I perspected him all wrong. And, I mean, he does love him. I can see that he does love him. But he just doesn't have the structure. He doesn't have the structure like we were trying to embed in him. Yeah. But he does love him.
That's cool. That's awesome. One more? Or no more? Andrew.
What can we do to help you guys?
Good question.
That is a good question.
We need help, but I don't know how to ask for it, because sometimes I don't know what I need. Like, I mean, one obvious one, or maybe not so obvious, is sometimes we need childcare, you know, somebody to watch the kids. But
even legally, you have to, unfortunately, with foster care, they have to be approved as foster parents before they even wait
and take for you. I don't know about federally, but not in Philadelphia. 3 years ago, they made a law. It's the Prudent and Responsible Parenting Law that allows foster parents to choose. If you would trust your own kids with someone, you're allowed to have that person watch your foster kids. And you're also allowed to take them on vacation. Like, I'm going to Michigan. I leave on Thursday. I'm taking guy with me. I just have to let the agency know where I'm going and where I'm staying. Because before, you'd have to get permission to take kids on vacation. And then the parents would say no because they don't want the kids having a good time with you. It's seriously, you know, so thankfully, at least I can't say that for New Jersey, but at least in Philadelphia, I think that's a federal law actually, but
in New Jersey years ago, they wouldn't admit that. They changed, you know, everybody had to be foster parent.
They changed
the
law.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Yeah, so if we trust them, then it's okay to. I mean, and this doesn't sound the way that I'm going to say it doesn't sound right, but the last couple date nights that we've had no kids with us. We actually went out and bought a new bed that we've been needing for some time, and we went out and bought a car. So that was our date nights.
Sounds romantic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey.
Our date night was trying to negotiate a car price with the salesman. So.
Fun. Well, I want to do this, and this is totally different. We've never done anything like this before, but I think it's an effective way for you to get to know something totally outside the norm, because this is a special assignment. You see that now, right? And that's what it is. It's a special assignment where I'm looking and saying, okay, God, what do you want? And through this circumstance, God, this stinky circumstance here, you're steering me over here. It doesn't get rid of the pain, but it does redeem the pain. You see that? Where God now gives value to this pain, where Jim and Nikki are able to affect a half a dozen so far, not only kids, but families, and this entire church. And here's what I would encourage us as a church, with everyone. Number one, we should pray for each other. Okay? But it doesn't stop there. We should be looking out for ways to care for. Now that we're aware of their special assignment, and maybe you get to know someone else's special assignment, and you're aware of the different things they're going through, look for ways to reach out and care. God can use you In the same way, like Moses and Aaron, they're reaching out to the Israelites saying, let's go. It's going to take everyone to get on board. In the same kind of sense, when we get on board with each other and encourage each other and help each other through the different times, maybe it's just, hey, I want to give you a free date night. And if you want to get another car, that's up to you, but I'll give you a date night, you know?
Hopefully we're not going to get another
car. Yeah. But you follow what I'm saying. Or maybe it's, hey, listen, I'm going to give you my phone number. If you need an extra errand run, call me. I'll run an errand for you. Or, hey, if you're having a rough day, you just need an extra pair of hands in the house, I'll drive 40 minutes to your house and be able to hang out with you. That's true love. Like, it goes beyond. Like, praying, yes, absolutely, but it goes beyond that. It's actually getting your feet to work, too. Does that make sense? Okay. Thank you.
The one thing that I felt really good about is what she told you.
I was going to share that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Fine. So don't steal fine my thunder. Me. This is the best part for me. It's the only part I get to play. So
it made me feel good.
It's cool. So I told him, and I talked to him. So when we went over there, and I forgot to put on the PowerPoint the pictures that we took. I'm so bad with some of this technology stuff. So at any rate, I'm sitting here actually thinking, if I text it to Andrew, he could put it on the PowerPoint before we're done, and nobody would know. Anyway. So we're sitting there on the couch in their living room. You got all these kids like all over the place. I'm trying to, and Mel and I are talking to Jim and Nikki, trying to have this conversation. I'm jotting down notes, and Mel and I came with all kinds of questions, and we go over the place, and it's just all right. They've got a couple kids out front swimming around in this little pool, and they're coming in, sopping wet, and we're like, here's question number three. They might want to clean that up, and all this stuff that's going on. And so we're asking the questions we prepared, and then the ones we didn't. We just kind of went with it. And so I looked over, she's watching this Disney something or other on the couch here, and I looked over at her and I said, hey, let me ask you a question. She goes, okay, go ahead. I said, what's the best part of this for you? Now, she's 10. She gave zero thought to this answer. Zero. Instantly out of her mouth, she said two things. First thing was, I'm safe. This broke my heart. I'm sitting here listening to a 10-year-old say, the best part of this is I'm safe. And the second thing was, I trust them. Wow. I don't know what it's like at 10 to feel unsafe and to feel like I couldn't trust people around me. But God's special assignment for them is to provide safety in an environment where they can trust. And I don't know what God's special assignment is for you. I love that they're willing to step out. And while Jim's like, I don't know if we can take another one, Nikki's like, oh, yes, we can. Yes, dear. thank you. Thanks for the impact you're making. Thank you for the lives that you're shaping because of this special assignment. Church, if you don't know what your special assignment is yet, ask God to put you on assignment. Let him do amazing work. If you have any questions for them, you are welcome to ask them afterwards. They're going to hang out for a little bit and be available for you to ask or to just encourage or whatever. I think this has been a fantastic day. Thank you so much. Can we just pray for them and close in prayer? Lord God, thank you. Thank you for putting Jim and Nikki onto this special assignment. This wasn't the assignment they wanted. They had different plans, but God, you put them on this assignment. Thank you for the support they have with all their family. And Lord, as a church family, I pray that we would support them as well and do that well. I pray that, Lord, you'd give them strength for every day. The courage to know what to say, what to do, how to rearrange the schedule, and how to manipulate different things to make it all work. And Lord, I pray that you would just allow them to minister to these children in ways that we couldn't even imagine and be a blessing to them that lasts for the rest of their lives even. And Lord, even through this, may they have the opportunities to share the hope that they have through Jesus, the reason why they would love and look out for kids. And Lord, I pray that you just guide each and every one of us, that we'd follow you and be on the assignment that you've called us to. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. Thank you, guys. Thanks so much. Let's give him a hand. Listen, whatever assignment God has given to you, listen to God. Know that it might get worse before it gets better. And don't quit until God tells you that the assignment is over.